I genuinely feel like they shouldn't even scrim this week. They should take the whole week off.
Bro, that guy was on a spree of getting cooked.
There's no way to rattle Selenium from behind the computer. You gotta, you know.
Behind the computer.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you gonna do?
What's up, guys, and welcome back to Reverse Sweep, presented by Prize Picks. Download the app today and use code Reverse Sweep for a first deposit match of up to $100. As always, subscribe to the show so that you know when our future episodes go live. Major 3 is starting to shape up. And I'm joined today by Pat, Chris, and Doug here to discuss all in today's show. First of all, a team that has been getting a ton of flack from all of us for the first couple of weeks of this stage, LAG. They made a roster change. They dropped Adam Assault for Flames. I'm interested to know, first and foremost, Chris, what are your thoughts on it?
I love that they picked up Flames. They finally gave him a chance. I've always been high on Flames and Challengers. I didn't think they would pull the trigger because they were so stuck in their ways, but they finally did. And it's paid off, man. Flames have been looking like a really good addition to the team, and everyone else has been starting to step up as well, which could be a catalyst of Flames and his more consistent performances over Assault. I'm liking the trajectory of this LAG team. They look a lot better. They look solid in search. They still look a little bit shaky in the hardpoint, obviously, because I still think they have pacing issues within their roster, and their control is solid. They got two decent wins on the board. So I expect this team to close out the stage in a pretty good fashion and hopefully go into that major and get a top eight, top six placing if they keep playing like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because this team was so bad for so long. Like, we were begging for any change. And Chris, you were saying they weren't going to make any change at all. But I honestly don't even care that they dropped Adam. I just think they should have dropped anyone. I'm just glad they made something different happen. Granted,
they need a new look.
Yeah, they were at that point where, you know, I mean, this happens to a lot of teams often, where you just get to that point where you're just chalked, and this team was chalked. So I'm glad they made a change, just because it kind of just adds life back to the team. Like, even if they skill-wise didn't improve, even if Flames is a wash of a player than Adam, and I think Flames has, you know, been playing way better than Adam was playing, it just gives them life. That gives them confidence. It gives them that honeymoon stage where, you know, maybe they can make something happen. So yeah, I mean, I was impressed. That kid played pretty good, and really in S&D especially too. So thumbs up move. I'm glad they finally made one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Flames, he's always been a really good player in Challengers. He was a player that we were looking at Boston Academy last year before I ended up switching to an AR. He was the last option that we decided before we had me switch to the AR. We wanted Flames to be on our Academy team as an assault rifle player, but he thought his time was coming a lot sooner. He's been very patient in Challengers ever since then. He was getting a lot of looks since then. And I agree with you, Pat. He definitely should have been called up to this roster a little bit sooner. But it definitely was a great time for them because they did go 2-0 in their matches. He was their MVP in the first match. He brings a lot to a team. I think he has really good gunny, really good awareness. He has great intangibles, and his search and destroy is unmatched. I think he's one of the best search and destroy players in Challengers. So I think that's definitely the X factor that he brings to their team, on top of, as well, that honeymoon phase too.
He's also a very confident person, because I know him very personally, and like, he's going to bring that confidence to the roster, and he's a person that's not afraid to speak his mind. So he's not just going to kind of bow down to the rest of the roster. And if he feels like there needs to be change or something like that, or along the lines of strategy, he's going to say his piece. So he's going to contribute. So far, so good for them. Estro also played really well. Diamond Con had a really amazing series. Everyone on this roster seems to be playing a lot better. And just looking at their hard point, hopefully they can iron things out and improve there.
Yeah, I think just to add my opinion in as well on Flames, I think in the off season, when I was still with LAG for a period of time when we were discussing rosters, he was in the conversation just because of him working previously and like being a part of that same crew. As you know, Chris, like, they're always in TeamSpeak together, even last year. So like, just from my experience, just hearing him in comms, I think as well, in Hardpoint, he's very good at directing the flow of, you know, and that bringing that energy to the team. So I think it's a good addition, just changing up the pace for the squad and really bringing some new life to the team. So although I think it's a good week, like you guys are saying, honeymoon period potentially, we'll have to wait and see how they pan out in future matches, but definitely going 2-0, strong start. And a team that another LA team that we need to talk about, LAT, they've been going game five every single series this stage. They start off, I think, 1-3 in control this stage, which I think is the reason why they're mostly going the distance here. But unfortunately, their last series, even though they are 3-1, so they have started off well, their last series there, they get reverse swept by Minnesota. And I think that that control, those control issues, sorry, should I say, are kind of coming to fruition there in that series. Why do you think LA Thieves have been struggling to just close out? Is it just the control, or are there other gaping issues in their game?
Control's definitely doing them no favors, but they also opt to play invasion control a lot. And yeah, when it comes to the top teams, there are a lot of good invasion teams that can close out those offenses. But for the most part, when you look at the rest of the league, winning offense and defense is just completely different. Like, defense is looked at as like a guarantee, and offense is looked at as like impossible. And a lot of it's just coming down to like Fugues, where it's just like teams are getting defense round five. Sometimes teams are choking it. I think they actually choked one this week against Rocker, which ended up leading to them getting reverse swept. And I just don't like that map, and they played a lot in their series. So sometimes, I mean, it's going to bite them in the ass. They're going to play one of those maps that is going to go down to like absolute ridiculous situations that should probably never happen. But outside of that, I feel like they're just like really bad at like getting those game four wins. I feel like most of the time, Pat even said this on the flank, whenever they lose that game four, it's pretty much almost an auto loss. Whereas if they win that game four, they're probably going to guarantee win five. So I think it's probably a map pool issue where like they don't have a ton of particularly strong hard points. And most of the time they're splitting evenly with the map pool of the other team. And then on top of that, they're just choking scenarios, which will end up leading them losing. But they did clutch up a lot of games. So another thing that was said on the flank was eventually the ice is going to melt, and it melted against the Rocker in their final series.
The weird thing for me is this: why does this team have to go game five every time? Like, obviously, it's you know, to Chris's point, it's likely a map pool issue, but it's like, you don't, no team wants to be the team that like lives and dies by like game five. Like, there's been a couple of teams in that in the past, and I always like, I hated being that team. I never wanted to be the team that like my whole, you know, whether I succeed or fail is based on how my team does game five. So yeah, I think they really need to hit scrims and just practice on their map, expanding their map pool. And to Chris's point, yeah, they every time they've won a game four in any series so far in the CDL, they win the series. They're 3-0 winning game four, but they're 3-12 in map four. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if they're team A or team B, but they're getting, their series are living and dying by whatever that map four is. And so yeah, they just need to expand that pool to where they can confidently be good at both hardpoints that are in a series.
The tricky part about this team though is that they are on the bottom end. So when it comes to like taking risk and trying to expand map pool, at least in matches, and going for those risky picks, is like they don't have that sort of that room to like test things out or maybe try out a map, even if it might not be particularly a bad idea because the team is decent at it. So they're probably just going for like these very clear cut vetoes, and they just might not be like, you know, clutching up. And
but that also makes them a team that's super easy to veto against, which then in turn puts them in that situation where they probably aren't getting a good map for them because the other team is getting one of their best maps. It's I think it's a double-edged sword, and that's kind of where I'm like, just stop playing. Like, literally go back, you have a week of scrims, like don't even play the maps that you're confident on. Like, basically just focus fully, VOD review fully on the maps that you know you need to improve on, because that's going to be a decider for them for whether they're able to clutch up in the standings.
Which is exactly why what Pat just said is true, because they need to get to the root of the problem with it. And it's just, the problem isn't even a problem. They're winning series. Like, winning is winning at the end of the day. And Pat, not everyone's going to be a dynasty on a dominant team that could always win 3-0 and 3-1 comfortably. The only team doing that in the league right now is still Atlanta FaZe. So everyone's trying to chase the dynasty, and you're just going to take wins however you can get them. So if they're getting wins and they're winning in their game fives, I also think that is a testament to how good your team could be if you're constantly closing out a game five, which is the opposite of what Boston has been doing, which is our next talking point here. But overall, if you're 3-1 in the league and you're winning your games, I would just do the same thing you're saying, Pat. Just iron out the things that are your weaknesses and don't worry about your strengths right now.
And I think you just touched on it, Doug. Their next match, LA Thieves, is actually against the Boston Breach. So if it goes game five, they know they're probably going to be doing good, because the Boston Breach have not been looking good in S&D and not been looking good in game fives. What do you think is going on wrong there, Doug, with your boys?
Breach is in like the absolute rock bottom that you could possibly be in. I guess the silver lining is that they're a really good hardpoint team and they're really good on Karachi control. They haven't dropped the round of Karachi control and they're at least splitting hardpoints, and they do definitely look good in hardpoint. I mean, that's for sure. But again, Search and Destroy wins you championships. And if you're 0-6 in Search and Destroys, you lose 3 straight game fives. It clearly to me is just the dynamic of how we're playing Search and Destroy. It just needs to change, clearly. Again, I'm watching Pentagram take the bomb and plant for us. When he joined the academy team, I told him straight up, if you take the bomb, you're dropped. Like, you're not taking the bomb. I'm the best bomb planter of all time. Don't take the bomb from me. And the guy would never take the bomb. And now he's sitting here taking the bomb in the league for the team. On a 5-5, he decided to push through on the 6-star to flip the map. But either way, Diamond Con had a streak, and it didn't even matter what he did, honestly, because the streak was going to kill them.
Yeah, they probably lost anyways.
They were probably going to lose regardless of that. And then again, the 1v3 from Diamond Con as well. It seems like to me, I've been a part of dynasty squads in Search and Destroy. And every time I was on those teams, I was with one with you, Chris. I was with one with you, Pat. We never lost Search and Destroy. It was very clear cut because every time we were winning these Search and Destroys, we all understood the spacing of the players on the map. And if something was to happen anywhere on the map, how to adjust quickly to it. What I'm watching with the Boston Breach in Search and Destroy is they're not adjusting quickly to anything. And on top of that, too, they don't really seem to know what their teammates have on the map. And the third thing, they're not consistently aggressively going to plant a bomb either. So if you're hesitating the bomb plant, you don't really know where your teammates are watching for you on the map for Search and Destroy, and your mid-round adjustments are random, it's going to lead to randomness. It's almost like flipping a coin, like how we've talked about going game 5, round 11, and just losing every single time is the most heartbreaking thing to see in Call of Duty. So I agree. They definitely have to change their act up and fix these Search and Destroys. I know they've been grinding. I know they've been putting a lot of time into Search and Destroy recently, so we'll see how it pays off.
I will say, my bad, Pat, I just want to say, I do think they actually have a chance in their next series against LAT, because with LAT's struggles to like close out series convincingly and Boston being such a strong hardpoint team, if Boston can take both of those HPs, which they have been doing in pretty much most of their series, it's going to come down to probably a high rise control is what I expect to be played, because their Boston's look good on Karachi and LAT don't really play it too much. They play invasion and high rise a lot. Invasion's not going to get played by Boston. So it's probably going to go down to that high rise control. And if they might actually be able to squeak this out in like a 3-0, 3-1 fashion, even if they do lose that Search and Destroy, you know, looking forward to their next match.
Well, it's not actually their next match. It's LA Thieves' next match is Boston, but Boston play Optic before that, so they're going to be even more in the mud by that point. So I just don't know if I've if I've got much faith in the Boston Breach in the middle of their matches. To be honest,
my question for you, Doug, what do you think this team? I know you mentioned they're not adapting, which is definitely true, but what do you think it is that they're like? They don't have any clutch factor about them. Like they're getting 1v3'd. They're like they have. It just seems like they have no clutch and no ice in situations where they're getting clutched on. And that's another thing with them blowing like 2-5, 1-5 leads in SND. Like I'll be honest, this team so far to me phenomenal in respawn. They're 2-1 in control. They're 4-2 in hardpoint. They look good in respawns. Period. But they're 0-6 in S&D, and aside from just being bad at the mode as a whole and not adapting to teams changing, how are they going up and then just getting came back on, getting clutched on? You know what I mean? Like, where is their ice? Like, what? I don't. That's not something really you can practice, so I'm kind of wondering, like, what do you think the solution for that is?
I think the solution is getting out of your own way. It's an obvious solution to me. I want to talk more about Search and Destroy with the team, but I also want to stay away from the team because regardless of the team winning or losing, I don't believe that I should get involved unless if I'm told to. But from what I'm watching and observing, Priest is always the last one alive every single time. And I feel like he's kind of like a do-it-all man. For Priest to be the last one alive every single time, it tells me he's very disciplined on his lane. So he's doing a good job of, okay, what's the strat? It's this? Great. I'm going to go there and do that. And he's basically trusting his team to do their jobs. There's miscommunications happening between the teammates, clearly, because he's always the last one alive. So either A, the team needs to be more disciplined with holding their lanes and just chill, or B, they need to do a reverse 180 and have Priesta kind of getting more in the mix and letting someone else clutch in the end game of the rounds. I also think that you have someone like Snoopy, who's probably one of the most aggressive players in Call of Duty. So if you want to play off of his play style, it's very important to move around the map around his play style, because he's really, really good at clearing lanes consistently and putting his teammates in great situations for trades. So you either play off of Snoopy or you are even more disciplined on the map. You have to do one of the two. I could tell you from playing with Snoopy, every Academy roster we had, we were dominant in Search and Destroy. And when we had Snoopy on the Academy roster, it was very clear we would just simply run behind Snoopy on the map and we would never lose a Search and Destroy. What I'm watching with Boston Breach is the complete opposite. It just seems like Pentagram and Snoopy love to run with each other, but he's now planting the bombs, which clearly he's not comfortable doing. Then we're leaving Priest out to dry on the side of the map, and he's just sitting there in like a 1v3 or a 1v2, and he's just chalked every single time. Or he's in like a random 50-50 1v1, which is just a 50-50. And then Ben is just holding one of the lanes on the map on an island somewhere, or like looking over somebody somewhere. But it just seems to me like it's very clear. Let Snoopy clear stuff out, bait him, run behind him, plant the bombs, and then play your timings on your cuts. It's
didn't,
really simple.
Didn't Preston used to carry bomb? I mean, obviously he's played a ton of roles for different teams, but he used to be a bomb carrier. I'm wondering if that's kind of a solution, because you're mentioning he's last alive every time. Like that gets him a little bit more involved, a little bit more active. Maybe solves the issue with Pentagram carrying bomb, kind of maybe a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, I did mention to the coaches after we lost the first series that we should swap bomb planters, because I knew for a fact that Pentagram was not a bomb planter, because I picked him up and I told him, like, yo, you don't plant bombs? And he's like, good, because I'm not really interested in planting them. And I was like, well, that's a great combination here, because I know that I am very interested in planting the bombs. And Pentagram would just drop double digits every S&D because he would just bait me off the bomb every time. Now he's 180ing his play style to plant a bomb, and he's getting caught out looking dumb because he's not doing it all the time. So I think the benefit of having someone like Parisa on your team is that this guy not only is the most winningest player in the league, he's the most winningest player in the league because he could do anything on the map. If you need him to be the dirty work guy, he can be the dirty work guy. If you need him to be the bomb planter, he can be the bomb planter. If you need him to sit in a hill, he can sit in a hill. You need him to run a sub, he can run a sub. You need him to run an AR, he can run an AR. I mean, this guy's a Swiss Army knife. So yeah, is Pentagram to an extent, but I think letting Pentagram and Snoopy roam on the map, I'm telling you, as an AR player in MW2, playing with those two guys, that was one of the best sub duo I played with in a very long time. It was so easy just letting those guys run around, fly, get their kills, and do whatever they wanted. And I would just go to the most basic copy, cut, paste spots, and I would have so much time on my lane to do anything with freedom. So for me, it's very simple. I would have Priest to plant the bombs, let Snoopy clear the lanes, run behind him, let Pentagram do whatever the hell he wants, and then have Beans play an island, and let him play the clutch. Because yeah, if I'm in a 1v1 against Ben Beans, again, like if I'm playing against someone like Ben Beans and he knows where I am and I have to square up with him, I'm running away. I'm not challenging that guy. So like, I don't want to challenge that guy. So that's the way that I would structure it. But again, it's up to the players also at the same time too. Like you could tell, like, again, you could tell players to play a certain way or do a certain thing, but we know how it is, Pat. Like when you get in the game, you're going to play and do whatever you see is fit,
right? Yeah.
You control the outcome. So
I mean,
that's just what I've been seeing.
I hope they make that switch. I think that would help them a lot. And you know, where Boston is not good at getting quick plants down, luckily, Prize Picks has very quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. And that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. And jumping over to our picks, Mark, you kind of, I don't want to say you costed us, but you costed us a little bit. If you guys remember from last show, we had Assault, obviously, as our third entry here. He ended up getting dropped, so we had to make a last-minute substitution. We put it in the Discord, and Mark picked Fame, and unfortunately, Fame is the only one who lost us on this power play. What do you guys think?
My bad. I just want to start off with saying it's my bad for this one. At the end of the day, I wasn't expecting this Flames roster change to be as big of a success as it has been. So at the end of the day, I'll put my hands up, but I think it was a fair shout. I think it's a fair shout.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the problem with Fame, I think, Chris, you've talked about this a lot. Like, this guy is so hit or miss. Like, he could literally be the best player in the lobby or the worst. And unfortunately, he had a pretty good series versus Minnesota, but we lost, but it's all good. We got another week coming up. We got three games, so those are for next Friday. We have the Miami Heretics versus, this is going to be interesting, we got basically three of the top three versus three of the bottom three. We got Heretics versus Subliners, Optic versus Boston, and Vegas versus FaZe.
The thing is with this Heretics NYSL matchup, I think the other two matchups we kind of know exactly what's going to be going down, but I'm still starting to have some doubts about this New York Sublaners team and if they're going to be able to actually, like, I don't know if it's going to be like a bloodbath here or if it's going to be a nail biter of a series, you know? What do you guys think how this Miami Heretics and New York Sublaners match is going to go in general before we even think about who we're going to play?
I think it'll be a mixy one between both teams, and I think that we probably could go with, like, I think Lucky or Vickle Moore would actually probably hit. They've actually been playing pretty good for their team. And I feel like if this is a gritty one, I could see them both going more.
I would have more confidence in Vickle, I think, personally.
Yeah, Vickle is a sub, so.
Yeah, I definitely have more confidence in Vickle because, like, we've had quite a few lucky lesses this year, as we know.
Do we think Sib's going to bounce back? Because he's been terrible. Like, he's been really bad the last few matches. Is there any chance we want to follow 0-4 here and go with a little man less?
I think Sib is the type of player who knows how to get kills really, really efficiently against players that are reckless. And I feel like he would match up very well versus a Miami Heretics here, to be honest. Like, when we're talking New York Miami, Pat.
I mean, he's not been doing it a lot, though. I mean, even against Seattle, I mean, I know they've just obviously had a tough matchup playing against FaZe, but even in their previous match against Seattle, Sib had a 0.7. So, like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Seattle have obviously been playing very well, so maybe that's something to take note of, but at the end of the day, I just don't think I'm super confident on Sib in general.
I think Sib's projections will probably be pretty low just because he's been playing pretty poorly, and I think he's likely to have at least a decent series.
So Sib Moore?
How long is he going to struggle for, right?
We can hold that thought.
Yeah, true.
We can hold that thought and maybe look at the other matches.
That's true.
All right, let's come back to this one then. So Optic against Boston. I'm scared of this one because I think the hard points are going to be good. I genuinely think Boston's a solid hardpoint team, so I kind of feel like the hardpoints are going to go the distance. I mean, we even saw it this weekend. Like, Optic's taking some teams they're obviously better than, like, a little bit further in hardpoint than we would expect. I think we could see maybe, Rio or something like that. That's always the question mark, right? If we see a Rio game one, then we always want to take the more.
I think we'll see Vista and Six Star in this one or something along those lines because Boston and Optic both play Six Star and they both played Vista. So I think those are one of those maps will make it in. As for the second map, I don't know what that'll be, but the fourth. I think we could go with like a Beans more. Beans loves kills.
Yeah.
Beans loves kills. Like, if they're playing good hardpoint, Beans will hit the more.
Yeah, and like you guys said, Boston have been looking good on respawn. In S&D here, Optic, will they be playing some weird S&D maps again? Like, is there a chance that Boston get an S&D on the board against Optic and then it makes like a completely different series? But yeah, I'm fully on board with the Beans more. I think it's going to be some grueler hardpoints. And hopefully the map ones are real. And then
yeah, Beans more sounds good too. I like the Beans more with this matchup as well. I think he always seems to show up versus their teams. He did it on land one time, right? Like, he had a really good series playing them on land. So I definitely could see the Beans more.
Yeah,
on this he shoots good.
And I kind of want to avoid all the players on Optic because we don't know. This could be a fast 3-0, and so it's kind of dangerous to pick any them more or less. So we cool with just a Beans from this series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. In the next series, we got Vegas versus Atlanta. My initial thing says we should bet like on a Geo bounce back. Like, he was one of their best players and he's kind of been slowing down, and it's kind of like the same story with Sib. Like, he's got to play decent, right? Like,
don't you think it's a team dynamic thing though? Cause like, they lost the glue guy and now they have Asim, who's an aggressive player. So like, don't you think that Purge was making it easy for Geo to get kills, and now since they have Asim, it's harder for Geo to get kills because of the aggression?
It's possible, yeah. I mean, my biggest fear from this series is it's going to be an Atlanta FaZe like blowout, like 100-point club, 6-0, 3-0.
Well, Atlanta's in form right now, though, so it's like, versus everywhere they play, it seems to be like that, you know?
Asim has not been playing particularly well on this roster, and even in the stat category, he has, I don't think he's even gone positive yet.
I think.
I mean, Geo hasn't either since they made this change, and his projection would be much higher than Asim's.
It might be.
Like, Geo was their best Slayer. Like, right? he was one of their best Slayers with Attached. So in
it's
stage
all about how
two.
Your team is put together, Pat. I feel like
I'm saying like his projection where it's set is going to be based on the fact that has been there. Like, it's his average. He's been one of their better Slayers, and he's playing really bad now. And so if we're thinking like it's going to be a 3-0 versus Atlanta, then maybe the Geo less is the play.
Geo less sounds like a smart move just because of the way the team dynamics looking and who they're playing against too. I would agree.
I think you'd almost take a less on any single Vegas player here.
Yeah, that's what we're kind of thinking. Like, what's the best player though? Yeah,
maybe not.
I would take it more an attach.
Like, but do we think Geo's the best player to go less, you know, against?
Probably.
Yeah, I think Asim will have a bounce back in terms of the kills. I think Geo would still struggle because of the team dynamic and playing against FaZe. So I think that's a good calculated guess.
All right.
Yeah, I'm with it. I'm not 100% convinced on it, but. You know what? I'll jump on the bandwagon. I think anyone.
I mean, Mark,
Vegas
if you're not convinced,
away.
I mean, I want to take the opposite of what you think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think anyone in Vegas is good for the less. I just think I don't know if Geo is the right guy for that, personally. But
I see what you're saying. Yeah. What about the first series going back? Heretics versus Subliners.
I think we just take the Vicklemore.
So Vicklemore, Beansmore, Geo less.
Looks good to me.
Yeah.
Everybody good with that?
Lock it in, Pat.
All right. We'll lock that in next week. Remember, Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make these picks and submit the entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code REVERSESWEEP for a first deposit match up to $100.
And now, getting back into the matches, we had Optic taking on Miami. They handled business there. They had a shaky high-res S&D, which does go the distance, in fairness, but... do you think the Optic maybe have some sort of issues in their S&D map pool now, obviously with Six Star being brought in? Or are they just testing out map pools, just being super confident in their own ability?
I don't think they've played Six Star S&D, have they?
No, they haven't. So they must not be confident with how they've been performing in practice and whatnot. So,
well, they're confident with losing high rise, that's for sure.
I think we were talking about it on the flank. Octane brought it up. He said that high-rise S&D and high-rise control are their win conditions against FaZe, and that's kind of where they're looking at. They're trying to, like, beat FaZe. Everyone's trying to chase them, and Optic knows they can take them on other maps, but they need to get better at some sort of a niche here. And with FaZe looking pretty good at six-star from what I watched versus in New York, Optic is just looking for anything they can get, and I guess high rise is the map they decided on trying to win. I feel like they're competitive on it. They just choke. They throw rounds a lot. I feel like every single time we watch them play this map, it's close, but they just never get the job done. So I don't know. Yeah, their S&D map pool definitely needs work. They need to incorporate it. They're just in such a tough position because we have yet to see them play six star. They don't really ever play Rio S&D either, and now they're playing high rise a lot, but they're struggling on it too. So the only map I feel like they're really confident in that I've seen them play for, like, was Karachi, and they haven't played that map in ages. So, yeah, these guys definitely have an S&D map pool issue that they're going to have to fix if they want to, you know, beat FaZe, but also, like, maybe potentially even make the grand finals, like, again.
Yeah, I think their respawn's been so dominant, though, that it's going to be hard for, like, even what we've seen out of New York and Toronto and even all the other teams so far, I think it'll be hard for them not to get to Grand Finals, to be fair. And we've said it throughout this year multiple times. Whenever Optic have been at their worst, it's been when their S&D struggled and they put a lot of effort into it. And I think they're probably going to do the same again before the Major. So I'd like to hope that they're going to improve. And looking at Six Star as a map, you'd assume that that team would be good on that map, you know what I mean? It kind of makes sense, high rise. I feel like it's a bit more ratty in a way. But Six Star is quite straight up. So maybe they just need to get back into the VOD lab and see what other teams are doing on the map and just trying to replicate it, really.
Maybe Sharksy needs to come out a little more.
Yeah.
Swimming around.
Yeah, get himself in the war. That's what he needs to be doing.
I just think that Optic's going through a period right now where they're kind of like extremely complacently, contently happy because everything seems to be going super well outside of getting the championship. And we know how it is. Like, if you're in their position right now, you don't really have much to complain about other than not winning. And if everything else except for winning is going well for you, they're going to win these series, and they're just taking care of business, man. The way I look at Optic, they're just trying to take care of business and be strictly business. It doesn't really matter how it gets done. I think you learn a lot about yourself in these moments when you're on a team like this too, Pat, because you know you could win and you could get the job done. And I don't think you're really thinking about it in terms of like, we have to dominate 3-0 every single time. I think they're trying to learn how could they beat Atlanta FaZe. What are their weaknesses and their vulnerabilities? You could clearly tell when they're playing in their matches. They do play maps that they're trying to get better on. They do try to expand map pools. They're streaming a lot more. They're doing a lot more content. So that takes away a little bit from your grind every single day with your team. But it seems like they're focusing in on the psychology of their team and how they could get better as opposed to like the maps themselves. I think that they're still winning. So at the end of the day, they only care about getting the wins.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically at a point where they're playing better than every team right now except FaZe, right? Like, they go into majority of their series confident. I think Kenny was even in the chat talking about how, like, playing against the bottom eight teams especially, like, is fake COD to them because they feel like the other teams aren't even trying to, like, win against them. And so they're not getting the type of practice that they obviously need to get better against the team that matters to them, which right now is FaZe, because that's the only team standing in their way currently. I'm not sure. I'm kind of in the boat where I think Optic like has to get creative with how they're gonna, you know, tackle FaZe as a whole. So I agree. I think they need to have some interesting map choices, map vetoes that are gonna throw FaZe off. Like, assuming, you know, you're not matching in the grand final, which of course we know this team will, but even if they happen to match up before then, in a best of five where, you know, the map pool is a little bit different than a grand final matchup. I don't know. I kind of feel like they gotta like throw a curveball at FaZe almost. I just don't know what that is.
Yeah, I really don't know either.
Just give FaZe all their best maps. So
that's a good strat potentially. I'm moving on to like the Seattle and Sib conversation. I think that's one thing that's kind of been the biggest drama topic of this week, really. You had Seattle being accused by Sib of running sound DQ in online matches, and O4 and Sib were going back and forth on the Twitter and all that. Do you guys think Seattle are breaking GAs again? No. I mean, I would be surprised if they were. There's no way that they've been like, because they've been punished for that, right? They got like weeks of scrims where, like, weeks where they couldn't scrim pro teams and stuff.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I would be surprised if they were breaking GA still, to be honest.
People literally hear like a door open or like the easiest sound to like cue in the game, and they're like, oh, "That guy's got EQ on." I'm like, "No, you just turn your headset up, bro. It's, you can hear things. Sound EQ is not stopping people from hearing stuff like door creaks and nade pulls and any of that stuff. And when the game gets real quiet, bro, and if nobody's common, you're gonna hear shit. People are probably just babies, bro.
The truth is, Chris, I mean, come on, bro. You know what it was like when you were in your prime. Like, there's always some, you're trying to have integrity when you're a player and you're at the top, and then when you have other guys that you respect that are at the top and you could tell they're not on your level with integrity, you stoop to their level too. And all it takes is one little thing to piss you off as a player, and then you're just going to be on the same playing field as them. It's always a find a way to get an advantage in every situation, it seems. And I just think some people are more shameless with it, and some people are more secretive with it. And then some people do take the high road, but for people to act like they take the high road over others, it definitely, I don't believe, is true, because I do think that everyone's looking for an advantage, Chris. Because even when we play together, man, there were so many times where we would see things that didn't add up, and we'd just sit there and say, well, fuck it, if they're doing it, we're gonna do it too.
So what you're saying, Doug, is Seb's running sound EQ next week, right?
I'm saying that if you're a player and you stand on business like Sib does, Sib is the type of guy that say, like, I'm not gonna do this because I have integrity. And then if he starts seeing that everyone else around him is doing it, he might just switch to the other side for a match just to get even at them and be like, well, screw it. You know, you did it to me once, eye for an eye. Like, that's also the mentality of a lot of people that have a lot of integrity in the league. So I feel like Dante does have great integrity. And I would respect it if he never switched over and went to the dark side. But we know how it is. I mean, players get petty.
My opinion is kind of that, you know, regardless of whether Seattle specifically is using sound EQ, it would not surprise me at all if another team in the bottom eight is using sound EQ or is breaking a GA secretly. You know, it's one of those things where like the league right now is almost like the haves and the haves not, right? In terms of like who's good and who's bad. And I feel like the teams down low are kind of just like, I wouldn't trust any of them to be like, to have integrity and not try to get better. Because I mean, at the end of the day, these guys' jobs are on the line, and a lot of them have never been in. Yeah, they're trying to make champs. A lot of them have never been there, never like haven't had much. Most of the bottom eight is filled with people who haven't had much success in the league in general. So it would not surprise me if teams are doing that online. The downside is obviously once you get the LAN, you can't do that and you would get exposed. But that's kind of the problem with the CL format, with how still, even after all these years, how important online matches are. And it's kind of sad that they don't have a way to just mitigate this, which I assume they would. If they ban it online or on LAN, I don't understand why they can't just monitor the PCs that they sent players at home to make sure that no one's using it. So, yeah, it's just one of those really unfortunate things that wouldn't surprise me if it's happening.
Yeah, not only that, there's like integrity cameras. There's so many different sort of avenues for them to keep an eye on players to know that if they're basically enabling loudness equalization, that I find that kind of hard to believe that the CDL haven't by this point, because it's been an issue for, what, 2 years now? How have they not like figured out a way around this to avoid it in online competition? Really, that's the kind of fundamental issue at the end of the day. Because then we're just put up to who knows who's running it, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't blame the bottom players. Like, if they're thinking like another team that they're competing against are going to be running it, I wouldn't blame them for running it at the same time. Because it's like, they're like you guys are saying, they're competing for champs, they're competing for their livelihoods. If you make champs, more than likely, like 80, 90% of players who make champs usually find themselves in the starting roster at the start of the next season, I feel like. Yep. So like, it's one of those ones where...
It's just sad. It's just a sad situation. Like,
yeah. But at the end of the day, Seattle did win in their match. They played against Vegas and won 3-0. Vegas, since making that change with Purge, who we've roasted quite a bit, regardless, I think their team composition now looks a little worse. They do have two kind of, I don't know, I don't really know the players that well, but just from the outside looking in, I don't really feel like Nero and Asim are like two, either of them are either like quite smart SMG players. So I feel like the kind of SMG duo is a bit off there. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
I don't know. Somebody else take this one.
Here's what I think. I think that I wouldn't really like put it on the SMG duo. I would just put it more so on the dynamic of what Purge brings to the team. I think every player needs that glue piece. Every team needs that glue piece. And Purge was definitely great at spacing the map for his team. And that's why Attach's stats look so good. Geo's stats look so good. Nero's stats, at times you would say he's unkillable. Every team needs enablers. You can't have four superstars running around. And I think Asim could be, I wouldn't classify him as a superstar, and I wouldn't classify him as an enabler either. I feel like Asim's kind of a gray area in between both, where he can have those pop-off moments where he's super aggressive on the map, makes his plays, and he also can open up the map and space the map out for his team too. But I feel like on this roster, it never really made sense because they lost the glue, man. So maybe if he replaced Nero on the roster, I think it would have made more sense. I don't really think it's an SMG dynamic thing though, Mark. I just think it's more so that Purge, whether he's running a sub or an AR, is like an ultimate glue man player. And I think that's why he was successful in Challengers too. And I think that's why Vegas looked better before. But then again, like it only has been two matches and they did play Optic in one of them. So you got to be a little bit more patient with the roster too. I think you should give them a little bit more time before we jump to a conclusion.
My thoughts are kind of that I agree. I think teams do need enablers, but and yeah, maybe Purge made Attach statistically look better, or Geo, but I don't think he was the reason they were winning or losing. Well, I do think in some series he was the reason they were losing. The problem with Purge was that he was just statistically by far the worst player in the CDL. Like, it wasn't just like he was bad at hardpoint or bad at... He was almost statistically in the bottom category for every single game mode. Like, he was just... He didn't have enough upside. Like, there's not enough intangibles. Let me put it this way. With how competitive COD is today, you just can't afford to have those style of players who bring, like, a leadership role only to the team. Comms only to the team. You know, like, you still have to be able to do your job well enough to add to your team's ability to win. And I just felt like Purge was just not there. He was consistently the worst performer. And yeah, we can say like he was taking routes or doing this, but at the end of the day, I mean, we're playing COD, and if he's just getting world starred every series, he's getting gunned, he can't pick up kills, like that's gonna play a much bigger toll on someone who just isn't comming as good as Purge or isn't rotating as much or whatever. I feel like there's room for all these players to just shift with this roster change to be a better team as a whole. My problem with Asim being picked up is, like, don't get me wrong, I would drop Purge 10 out of 10 times again after what I saw. I just don't agree with the Asim pickup because I don't think Asim is what this roster specifically needed to improve, right? Like, and so I mean, I wouldn't go back to Purge, but I am questioning the fact that they made this particular change instead of another one. I think there was better players out there. I mean, Vivid got dropped around the same time Purge did, so I'm really surprised that Vivid was not this team's number one option. I think that would have been, especially when we've talked about Vegas before, like, you kind of live and die by the pace that they play at, and I think Vivid would just add to that. Like, he's an enabler, even though in a different way. I mean, that guy is just go, 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 and he is constantly applying pressure. Like, that's, in my opinion, the best type of enabler. But, again, you know, maybe this team can work and they need time, but I still don't think this was the roster move that was going to elevate them to where they wanted to be.
I will also say that now thinking about it a bit, outside of their roster composition and stuff like that, the meta did change a little bit with the new maps. Like, it's like subs have way more of an impact now. You're seeing less people pull out third ARs because you're playing maps like Vista, like Rio, and even Six Star, which is a little bit more on the balanced end. These guys were, I think if I remember correctly, they did play Rio, so they were good at Rio. They were good at, what was the other hard points that they were good at?
Did they not play Invasion quite a bit?
I think they played Invasion a bit, and they did play some Skid Rows. So I don't know. I feel like these guys sneakily probably got hit by the map pool change.
I think Geo got hit by that the most.
Yeah, so they his stats have
fall off a cliff from where he was.
Yeah, they have some adapting to do, not only from their roster perspective, but the map pool perspective, and they're probably just dealing with so much shit right now that it's just all going wrong.
Yeah, I don't actually have this down in the topic points, but do you think Sib's performance maybe has been impacted by the map pool changes as well?
The whole roster, I mean...
The whole team seems to just be a little bit off now, Mark.
The fact that Skies is their best player, like... I'm just confused by as a whole. I don't know where their whole roster went, basically. Like, I said it earlier, this team has the talent of a top four team, like, skill wise, but they're playing with the confidence and the play style and mindset of a bottom eight team. And it makes no sense.
I think this team is probably going through a lot more than we would know, like, internally, just because, like, what's going on with their team and the performances that we're seeing just don't make sense. And it's got to be something like out of the ordinary that is affecting their mental. I don't know how it goes in practice, but their match preparation, everything is probably just not at its best right now. It's impacting the entire roster.
I do have faith in those guys to turn around, though. We've seen, like, that throughout their history, even after their success last year, they've had major dips in their form. Maybe not as bad as it has been recently, but at the same time, I do think that they're going to be a team that has the right sort of infrastructure around them to be able to sort of bring themselves out the hole. But a team that has not had to bring themselves out of the hole this year, FaZe. We touched on them earlier. We don't really talk too much about their matches because, you know, they just dominate in vast majority. And in this match against New York, they came in and they dominated both hard points. The other two maps were obviously a bit different. The S&D was close, going 6-5, and then the control being dominant in New York's favour. But Hardpoint in general, absolutely dominant from FaZe again. And, well, says they're the same, man. It's boring talking about them.
There's not much to say. They're just godlike. They don't need to change anything. They don't got to work on anything. They got nothing to improve on. They just got to keep up what they're doing because this team is at a point where there's like everything is rolling for them. They're firing on all cylinders. Their pickup in the offseason is having moments of being their best player. Like, they just, everything's going for them right now.
Could this be the best team of all time, Pat, if they win a ring this year?
I mean, it depends on how many events they win. I mean, they've only won one event and so far, and I don't know, one event plus champs, like, that wouldn't be a crazy, you know, accolade comparison. But we'll see. I mean, there's still two more events to go. I don't really care about the online, like what their record is in online matches. Like, I don't, that's why it's kind of hard to compare these eras to the old, because we didn't have online matches. So it's not like adding to their resume. I like to think
the old eras, it would be the same thing. The teams that were dominant at the top would just continue to stay dominant. Like how,
With Atlanta, but again, we've talked about like events mean so much more, and like being able to do it consistently at events is the outlier, and that's something that Atlanta FaZe has failed to do in the last couple of years. And you know, maybe now it's a turning point, obviously. You know, we'll see how they do the next two events, but I mean, right now all signs are just pointing to they're gonna wash the rest of the season. There's just really not much to say about them. They're godlike. I do want to add, Mark, one thing about New York. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but where New York is in the standings, right, they're like comfortably top four point wise, right? I genuinely feel like they shouldn't even scrim this week. No bullshit. They should take the whole week off. All from I think pros don't even play on Monday anyway. So they should just take Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. Don't play at all.
Get a full mental
reset. Yeah, go chill. Don't even play COD. Like, go relax. Go fucking do they're all in Dallas, I think. Just go do shit in Dallas that you haven't done. Like, come maybe play some ranked or whatever. Just chill. And then come back on Friday, get your warm-up scrim, and play your match. And that's it. Like, they just need a full reset. I think they're thinking way too much about the game. They're thinking way too much about where they're at mentally, where their team's at, how bad they're playing. Just forget all that shit. Take the whole week off. Come back Friday. New mindset, new mentality, and I think they'll be fine. Because, again, this team, talent-wise, they got all the talent in the world. They just need to put it together. So that would be my advice to the New York Subliners team. Take the whole week off, enjoy a nice little 3-day break, and come back firing on Friday.
Yeah, that actually is a thing that's happened to me in one of my teams. I remember back in, I think it was on Epsilon at the time, in Advanced Warfare. We didn't scrim going into Season 3 playoffs or something like that. We went to the event. We got third. And we actually went up 3-1 in a best of seven against Optic in winners finals, lost. Went up 3-0 in the best of seven in the losers finals and lost. But still, getting top third at that state of the year when this team that I was on was essentially at the bottom of the standings before that whole like DDoS scandal went in, they had to reset and bring everyone to the tournament. I got third without scrimming. Like, and it's because at one point we disliked each other. We were just annoyed and we just didn't play.
I mean, time to time, teams just need resets, bro. And I think New York is in the perfect opportunity for a reset. Like, it's not much complication to it. They literally should just do it and not think about it. I think they'd be way better off.
I agree. Yeah. 100% I agree.
That would actually be insane, but I swear to God, it actually might work.
No, that's one of the biggest issues in COD, though, in general, is a lot of the teams, a lot of the time, just think they can grind themselves out of problems rather than actual fixing the real issues within their team, whether that be a mental aspect. And I think a lot of the fans as well really don't see that too, that there's a lot more variables that come into to being a successful team in Call of Duty outside of just watching VOD. Because I've been there myself where as a coach, you're like, what do? You just going to sit and watch VOD all day for 3 hours until we magically get better? It just doesn't work that way. I fully agree. But to be fair, a player that has improved this week, and I want to give him some credit, is Dylan Envoy. Although I will take a bit of the credit away by saying his hardpoint performances were against Carolina, who haven't been looking like unbelievable, but still getting some wins on the board. But Envoy obviously had that unbelievably shit hardpoint run, but he had two positive hardpoints against Carolina. Do you think it's too early to say he's on an upward trajectory? Or, I mean, it's one match at the end of the day. It's the online CDL era.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is it finally gives him some fucking confidence. Jesus Christ, bro. Yeah. That guy was on a spree of getting cooked.
He was 10 hard points in a row of 0.5s, bro.
Bro, that is impressive. Holy fuck. So he's finally shooting back. You know, he did the damn thing. And hopefully, you know, this brings back that Toronto. Because I think, like, with the way the season's starting to pan out and how these teams have been going, it's kind of demoralizing to see the top four kind of splitting in half, where Optic and FaZe are the only two that are still looking like good. And then the other two are kind of just like, what is happening? So hopefully Toronto gets some life back in them, because I'd love to see a late season resurgence out of them. So hopefully give FaZe and Optic a little bit more competition, and maybe even if New York does too.
Yeah, I will say, I'm not putting a lot of like thought into it because it was against Carolina. I'm glad he broke his 10 hardpoint streak of getting world starred.
That's insane.
But I still need to see Jamie Insight bounce back. Like, where, like, he still had a bad series. And he, and granted, you know, he wasn't as bad of a streak as Envoy, but like, hell, it's getting there. Like, he still had a rough streak too. Even Kleenex, I mean, Kleenex has just kind of been like his him playing bad is like he's playing average. Like, that's kind of what he's been the last little bit. It's just average. But like, Scrappy's the only one on this team who's been consistently frying start to finish. And, you know, I think the way this squad was assembled was based on the fact that all these guys were putting up, playing to their potential. Not just one of them, not just two of them, all of them. And so I still think Insight needs to bounce back. Envoy still needs to, you know, get back to where he was. I still don't think as good as he played against Carolina, that's not his norm. He's not going to play like that forever. But he just needs to be consistently better. And then Kleenex, I mean, Chris, you talked about it a little bit earlier, like with the meta shift, it's shifted more to SMG favored maps. And I expect and hope, you know, Kleenex is in takeover mode in these SMG favored maps. So I think this team as a whole, like, I think they know how to play COD. They're an intelligent team. Their comms are great. They just kind of got to get their swagger back almost and start slaying to the potential that we know they can. And it goes for all of them, except obviously Scrappy, who's been playing really good the entire time.
I think just every team in the game is always going to go through a high and a low, just like we're talking with New York Subliners taking the whole week off, or Chris talking to your team from back in the day, or even Toronto with Envoy going through his low. The positive is that Envoy is playing better now. So, you know, it's always about just trying to balance everyone on the team to get to their highs together at the same time. And I think that's what Atlanta FaZe is doing right now. So Toronto's in another similar position where, Pat, they could even take a mental reset if they wanted to, because it is a long season and they're getting towards that midway point.
And they're locked in top four. Yeah.
Yeah. The grind right now is real. I mean, this is like your second half of the year. You got a few more online matches, a LAN, boom, seven more online matches, a LAN, champs. So like, this is that mid-season point where you just got off of a small little break. You're right back into the grind again. Maybe you take another small little break one more time if you're Toronto. I don't know when you would do it, but I think that you might want to start doing that leading into champs.
I mean, who do they play this weekend? Soon. Let's see. Who do they play this weekend?
They've got Minnesota on Sunday.
That's it? They only play one game?
Yeah, only one game.
Oh, take the week off.
And his last, match on Sunday.
Yeah,
well,
come back on like Friday, get some scrims in, take the week off.
If there's one team, in fairness, that I do know that won't try and grind through, Ryan, the coach of Toronto, Flux, he has the mentality of less is more when it comes down to Call of Duty. And he really pushes for the players to take time away from the game. To be honest, and like look after themselves physically, mentally, etc. So I do think that if that is a potential issue for them, that will be something that will be addressed, to be honest. So I had to worry about that from their point of view. But do you want to get into some community questions, lads?
Yeah, hit us more. Right. What you got?
Before we get into it, though, just remind you guys, get those comments below for next week's episode. There's some real good ones this week, so we're doing a bit of an extended one. We're going to answer like 4 to 5 questions. So starting off, we have Larry McDonald, who asked, who is the best COD player to never win a champs ring?
Proofy? What do you think, Pat?
That's tough. There's actually a few. Like, there's Gunless, Enable, Zuma.
I think you've got to pick someone that's probably been in the finals and lost multiple times, right?
It's gotta be
Enable. Then it's Enable. If it's someone that was in the finals and lost, it's Enable.
It's gotta be Enable. Enable's been a part of many successful champs runs, but he's ultimately never been able to get it done. And he's always been on really good teams throughout his career. So probably him.
I'd say Enable or Zuma would probably be my top two.
I think Zuma as a talent is probably the best that never won a ring, but Enable in terms of getting that close and not getting it done.
Yeah. And the fact that he obviously won multiple championships out with champs.
Yeah. Multiple games, had success at you know, winning, just not at the big one.
I think another honorable mention, may not have been in a lot of finals, but always had very high placements and success in his career, was Slacked. He placed very highly throughout his entire year on multiple games, but he ultimately never got a ring. And he was kind of always underrated in terms of just like how he was as a player, because he was never like a superstar, but he was always like a pretty good piece to like every single team he was on.
It's a good shout.
I don't think he beats Enable, I will give him an honorable shout as well to Bat No, I was going to say I would give a shout out to I was going to say Bance. He's lost in two champs finals.
That's true. Bance is up there too. Yeah.
Wait, what's the second one? BO3 and
Cold War.
Oh right, yeah, right. I totally forgot about that one.
Yeah, Ben Bance. Yeah. Can't forget Ben Bance.
All right. Next question. We've got Jay Money asking, do you feel like the league would be more entertaining if Simp, Ibiza, and Selium were all on different teams? I think I'm going to go with yes.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's an easy one to miss.
If there was a salary cap, a genuine salary cap in the league, which I don't even know if it's possible, where like certain you like, I feel like these players would split just to make more money to a degree.
Yeah, I think that's something, honestly, like, this is my problem with the league, and I doubt it'll ever happen, but, like, you know, the league just recently announced that they're, you know, they came to a new agreement with the teams, they're canceling the buy-ins, et cetera, and their hope is for a more sustainable league going forward. I don't see any world where the league is more sustainable with all the talent being on two or three, four teams. Like, I genuinely think if the league wants to be more sustainable, we have to have the ability for, you know, any team, even if we expand, to come in and be like, you know what? I want the best player. I'm going to offer him whatever he wants more than any other team will offer him, and I'm going to get him on my team, and then I'm going to build a roster from there. Because the reality is these teams are never going to break up. They're on the best orgs. They're getting paid the most salary, and they're basically guarantee themselves the lion's share of the prize money, right? Even if they place 1 through 4, it doesn't really matter. They lock up so much of that prize money, that guarantee. And so it's like, why would you ever leave?
I also have a genuine question. This might be insane. And I only say it might be insane because obviously during the offseason, I feel like these players are still getting paid if they're under contract. Is there a real world where teams like Atlanta FaZe are making more prize money throughout a year than their entire salary?
Yeah.
Because possible. Because if that's an,
I'm pretty sure FaZe did it in Cold War. They made more salary than, like, I think they made like 400k, 500k each in prize money alone.
So hear me out. If that's a realistic thing, even if there was salary caps, you think these players would still go to other teams if they're just they know they're going to make more money off their prize winnings?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I think the only thing that could
Look at professional sports leagues. That's why you don't have like money tied to the matches. Like, superstar players are the superstar players because they get paid the superstar bucks, right? Like, I feel like that's the only solve. Like, that's the weird thing with how, like, and this is the problem with CDL. Like, we tried to copy the sports model, you know, with the franchise leagues, but we did it like half-assed to where it doesn't even work. Like, ignore the fan side, the streaming side, the format side, all that. Like, from a purely competition standpoint, it just doesn't work. We're having events, multiple events through a year where there's a ton of prize money on the line, et cetera. Yeah, Chris, you're right. Like, there is no point for the top four to break up. That's I think, the problem with another problem of the mini with the league as it is.
So you think they should remove prize money at events and increase salary?
Yeah, I genuinely do. Not remove. I think there should still be prize money, but it shouldn't be to the point where, like, because what we're at right now, Doug, is there's prize money, right? Let's say there's a few million dollars, but because it's the same two or three teams getting that $2 or $3 million cut, like, every time, then it's going to outweigh the amount. Like, our team isn't, our league isn't, you know, it doesn't have enough depth. There's only four good teams who just run the league. And so they're going to get all the prize money.
So many people are going to think we're faded for saying something like remove the prize.
Not remove. Decrease it.
It's more so just like, it's just an interesting conversation because everyone's like, even I've looked at it from that perspective. This thought just came to me. I was like, wait, salary cap this, but like, are they making more money off prize? Even if their salaries went down and let's say FaZe or whatever org could offer player wouldn't offer them less. Like, would they even be in, or would offer them more? Would they be incentivized to even leave if they're just going to make more anyways? Probably not.
I think, just going back to that point, because I don't think any of us think that the prize money should be completely removed, but it doesn't really make sense because back when we were like the OGs, right? We're all the OGs here. When we were playing, there was no salary and you would play for the prize money. And
yeah, it's got to be one or the other.
Now you're double dipping because it's like, we're going to give you $350,000, $300,000 a year. And you're going to win events because you're the best in the game and you're going to get $50,000 per event that you win. And you're going to win at least one of these a year. Then you're going to go into the world championship and you're going to make at least $50,000, maybe $150,000 from there as well. And we're just going to stack all these players on these top teams, and the rich is going to get richer because they're going to get good salaries. They're going to get good prize earnings from the events. And that's where we're at right now with the league. That's exactly where we are in real time. So if you're on a bottom tier team,
you're getting the worst of both worlds on the bottom.
It's kind of like the monopoly that we've always seen in Call of Duty. We always have to have a monopoly in some way, it seems. And it's very hard to distribute towards talent. And especially now with the way the league's set up, it's very hard to distribute. So I would like to see something like that, because then maybe you have an org that is at the bottom of the league and they could just give like $1 million to Simp or whatever the price would be. And Simp would be like, yo, you know what, Tyler, sell Abizi. You know, it's been a great run. We've played together for 5 years. We won 2-3 champs rings, but now I'm actually going to be able to cash out and like actually retire. And like, I can only play a few more years and I'm good. Like my passion for playing with you guys for 5+ years, 6+ years, 7+ years, we don't have to run this for 10 years and just run the whole league, because I just want to start my family life and move on to something else now. Like, we don't even have an option for that to even be a reality, because it just doesn't make any sense for that reality. And if we're going to copy other sports models, that's the way it would go, right? Like, that's how it is in other sports franchise teams. So it does seem like we're kind of like in the middle of both, Pat.
Yeah, the format just makes no sense. And you're not incentivized as a bottom team to do anything. You're already paying your players the minimum, and you know you're not going to get prize money. You're just there to be there, like literally.
So, and then the players can't even stay long enough to make content and build their brands because they're so stressed about losing their job.
Yeah. They're just going to rebuild and be there to be there the next year.
And that's what that's got to be the worst part. I don't know if it's like that in other sports leagues, but if you're in a Call of Duty scene, even in Challengers too, if you know you just don't have a chance of going to the league or you don't have a chance of winning, that must be like the most depressing thing to deal with, to be honest.
And another part is like how much, you know, friendship is involved, right? Like we talk about all the time, like the teams just are getting recycled, right? From the bottom, the bottom players are basically from the league, go down to Challengers, come right back in, go right back down, come right back in. And there's no real growth happening. It's just we're in like this never ending cycle of just shit.
Which exactly why my philosophy on making teams is I never make my friends my teammates and make my teammates my friends. Everyone I've ever played with, I was not friends with you before I met you, ever. Like, I never was friends with you. I didn't care about you. I didn't know you. I couldn't care less about you. But thanks, if I believed in you.
I don't fuck with you either.
Yeah, like even to this day, Chris, right? Like, yo, it's like, dude, can you get the job done? Yes or no? And then we're going to be friends. If you can't get the job done, we could be friends.
I'm not going to talk to you like that. But, yeah.
Like with Pat, like I still to this day always will talk to you about things because we play with each other and we won. It's just that simple. Like we won together. So we weren't friends before all that. Well, I mean, we kind of were, but yeah, like you got to make your friends your teammates, not your teammates, not your friends, your teammates. I can't stand when people make their teammates their friends. Like, unless if your friends are goats, unless if your friends are the best, you know, but if they're not the best, don't make them your teammates. It's going to hold you back in the long run.
I thought you guys hit the nail on the head, to be honest. Yeah.
Did we answer like 4 questions off that guy's one question?
No, we just have to get honest with it though, you know?
I'm not going to lie. We had like multiple questions that were literally like you guys covered them all. So we'll move on. We're moving through a few questions there. We've got Nick Young from Spotify who asked.
Oh, a Spotify question. Love that.
Yeah, love that. He asks, is it time to give up the top 4 narrative and say there's 1-2 and then 3-12 that can beat each other on any day?
No, I think there's just one.
Yeah, it's just one right
it's
now.
It's just 1 versus 11, man. That's how I see this.
Everyone, dude, listen, FaZe is in their disrespectful era. Not only are they shitting on y'all, they're shooting bodies. They're talking shit.
Yo, it sounds like they might have heard a clip from Reverse Sweep. That's all I'm saying.
If the entire league is not trying to find a way to dethrone these guys, then I don't know what y'all are doing, bro. Like, you guys are all fucked right now. I don't know. Like, they could go to the event and get shit on for whatever reason, but I don't think that's going to happen. These guys.
But even if they did, Chris, they'll go back home and everyone will still fear them, though.
They'll go 7-0 online again and then go back and be in the final the next event. Yeah, that's just the problem with this team is, like, they're just so insanely talented that there's no getting rid of them. So, yeah, to answer Mark, my opinion, it's 1 versus 11, and we're waiting to see who can answer that call.
I'm gonna be honest, bro. You start playing FaZe, start breaking GAs, bro. Start stair glitching, start snaking. Like
I wouldn't do that. They gotta, I mean, like Bro, you gotta figure out a way to rattle these guys. Like, yes. And I think that's another problem with online matches, right? Like, there's no way to rattle Selenium from behind a computer. You know, like, there's no way to. There's just, it's not gonna happen. So yeah, I think they gotta, you know,
behind a computer.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you gonna do? He's gonna see you chirping online in a match or voice chat and like chirp right back or whatever. Like,
no way. Get in his face at an event. No.
I'm just saying, like, you gotta be able to shit talk. Like that scrappy thing against Carolina when they were playing in the warm up lounge, and they beat him like 250-19. He goes to their side. He's like, yo, are you guys lagging? Are you even playing? Like, we're shitting on you this bad. Like, they need to be able to, like, you know, get in their heads, and it's obviously going to be hard because FaZe is so good, but I just they got to rattle him, because right now this team is looking unstoppable.
I think you literally have to take any opportunity, because the opportunities are going to be minuscule, to, you know, disrespect them a little bit. And obviously that's rare when that situation's ever going to be the case. But like you said, Pat, those things, like when you're backstage and you destroy someone and you let them know about it, those things like have a very minor impact, but they do have an impact, to be honest. So
Kismet won one round of Search and Destroy, shot their body, and then they started off hot in the next map. I don't know. Yeah. They ended up 3-0 in them next map. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, true. I mean, to be honest, it's hard to like even think of a way of FaZe falling off at the minute and how they've been performing currently, to be honest. Let's move on to the next question from Chadwick. He said, would the CDL and or Call of Duty as a whole benefit from going boots on the ground to jetpacks every 2 years to keep it Call of Duty fresh?
No. I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
I think the CDL would benefit from having a good game every year. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't think the switch up is going to be good, because whether you believe it or not, you're going to alienate not only players, but fans. Like, some people just have different interests. Like, some don't like jetpacks, some don't like boots, whatever. I think just having a consistent, good product year after year is the only way to benefit the CDL.
No bugs, CDL ranked player from the get-go. I think that they need to get back to basics and fix the actual fundamental issues with the game, first and foremost, right now.
Just that's have a minimum cool. requirement too, right? Like, we're jumping studio to studio every year, and I feel like there's a lot of priority differences between the studios. Some care more than the others, etc. So I think just having a consistent, good product that's reliable, that everyone's happy with, that's the most beneficial thing.
Yeah, 100%. Well, guys, that's another great episode in the books. Thanks for watching Reverse Sweep presented by Prize Picks. Download the app today and use code REVERSESWEEP for a first deposit match up to $100. As always, make sure to subscribe to the channel, like the video, and comment below your questions for next episode. We'll see you all there.